No, no.
What happened?
He hates bright lights. You know, there's some things I forgot to tell you guys, and they're really important. Number one, he hates bright lights. We know that. But you got to keep him out of the sunlight. Sunlight will kill him. Number two, keep him away from water. Don't give him any water to drink. And whatever you do, don't give him a bath. And probably the most important thing, don't ever feed him after midnight.
On the first day of Christmas, my homeboy gave to me a sack of that crazy glue and told me to smoke it up slowly.
So, Matt loves Christmas.
A lot.
And he's an old-fashioned kind of cat.
Yep.
So I knew this would horrify him. That's why I put it on here.
I'm horrified. Congratulations. Christmas is my favorite time of year. This is a pretty okay Christmas movie. It's got a lot of callbacks to a lot of other things, which we'll talk about.
But what do you think about Death Row on Christmas?
I don't like it. I'm more of a Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole kind of guy.
Just for everybody's reference, we're officially starting our Christmas run here.
We're in.
So I'm going to do this the entire month of December.
What, torture me?
Try to begin every podcast horrifying Matt.
Oh, God. Okay, well, it's working so far.
So this is the Old School Movie Podcast. We are your hosts, Mike Auger.
I'm Matt Castro.
And we are talking about 1984's Gremlins. So, this movie went head-to-head with Ghostbusters.
What one? No, I'm kidding. Of course, I know what one.
Yeah, but...
Ghostbusters, because it's a much better movie. That's not to say this movie's bad.
It is, but I think this movie, first of all, did really well.
Phenomenally well.
Even going against Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
But this and two is held in high regard by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Not me.
Spoiler alert.
It's fine.
I haven't seen this in probably 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Gremlins 2 a lot more. I probably saw it later on in life, so it's more memorable to me.
I think most people have. From what I understand, I don't know anything about this franchise. I'm not a fan. I knew what it was.
You're not balls deep in the Gremlins lore?
No, I am not, and never will be. Mm-hmm. You know, well, we'll get there. From what I understand, most people, when they think of Gremlins, they're actually thinking of Gremlins 2. Like, that's the popular one.
Okay.
Because this movie barely has Gremlins in it. It goes a very long time without showing them. It's a really slow build.
Right. Yeah, this man.
What'd you think? Because you've seen this before, but you haven't seen it in a long time. What were your thoughts? Did you enjoy it? Yeah, that's how I felt too. There's some real. This is a weird movie. I think it's weird.
Let's get into the numbers and then we'll dissect it from there.
Yeah. Let's do stats. Okay. Gremlins was released in 1984, directed by Joe Dante, written by Chris Columbus, who would go on to direct Home Alone and first couple Harry Potter films and a bunch of other stuff. Very talented writer. Clearly on a pile of cocaine for this movie.
Well, Christopher Columbus for sure.
That's what I'm saying, for sure. Executive produced by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Same year he did Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So he was having 1984 was a real weird one for Steven Spielberg. The score I do want to mention real fast by Jerry Goldsmith, who has a pretty insane resume.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just read it real fast. 5 of the Star Trek films, 3 of the Rambo films, Logan's Run, Planet of the Apes, Tora Tora Tora, Patton, Chinatown, The Omen, Alien, Poltergeist, Medicine Man, Gremlins, Hoosiers, Total Recall, Air Force One, LA Confidential, one of my favorite movies of all time, Mulan, and The Mummy.
And that's a murderer's row of films.
It's fantastic run of films that he composed. And I did like the score in this. I thought it was good. I thought it was... appropriate for this type of movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Budget of $11 million, and it made an absolute killing. To date, the box office is $213 million worldwide. Now, that was much like, I think we talked about Scarface having a really high box office. Much like that, multiple re-releases. So yeah, the box office has been pumped up a little bit. But this movie did very well, even going up against Ghostbusters.
I mean, the thing is, too, it's only getting re-releases because it's so popular.
Absolutely. People love it. Like, Gremlins is, I would say this is a cult classic. Even though it's very popular,
yeah,
like it's not a mainstream movie. You know, it's not what you think about when you think of Christmas movies. Well, but people love it.
So, Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh yeah,
86% critic reviews, 78% fan.
Interesting. That's unusual that that happens with a movie like this.
IMDb 7.3, Metacritic is 70. So
okay, that's fair.
You know, it's that's pretty good numbers for Metacritic. I would say, but the story takes place in Kingston Falls, which is also the same backdrop of Back to the Future. Both were filmed Universal Studios lot.
Oh, okay, okay.
And it's a Christmas movie. It's kind of a half comedy, half Christmas movie mixed in with horror.
Very much a slasher inspired movie.
Yes.
Very much Christmas horror. It reminded me a little bit of Krampus, which I just watched. I love that movie. We'll cover that probably next year or hopefully soon. Very much a mishmash of genres. And what I was noticing was, and again, like I had never seen this before, so I'm coming into this completely blind, didn't know what to expect. I knew it was about little gremlins. That was it. This movie is an homage to other movies.
Yes.
There's a lot of, specifically The Wizard of Oz and It's a Wonderful Life kept popping into my head. Like, this is, this movie is paying honor to those films.
There's some Flashdance in here. There's some, like, Frank Sinatra old-type movies.
Oh,
like, there's
definitely
a lot of shit thrown in here.
Definitely some love letters to 1940s, 1950s movies, for sure.
Yeah.
But then you splash in the kind of horror element of the gremlins on top of that, and it makes it kind of interesting, which was my favorite part of the movie, when it actually gets to the gremlins running amok. That's the fun part.
That is the fun part.
Everything up to that is kind of a slog.
Right, but that's the thing. They take their time to build to the tension of that.
Yeah.
But and it is similar to like Drive when we talked about a few weeks ago.
Except this is interesting.
Right, but to get there to the anarchy in the third act.
Very much so.
I don't say it's as big of a slog as Drive.
No, no, this is still fun. And
this is not high art. Let's make no mistake about this. This is not an A24 film.
No, it's a schlocky B movie.
Right.
Set at Christmas.
Right.
It actually reminded me of do you like A Christmas Story?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this kind of gave me that vibe. I don't really know why. Set at Christmas, kind of dark.
I can understand that.
That movie's kind of dark.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not high art. It's not trying to be A24. It's a fun movie.
I think I want to talk about the first draft of this script before we break down the movie.
Sure.
Because I want to let you know, because there were a lot of things in this where you're like, whoa, that got dark. Or, whoa, that was pretty crazy.
Well, there's some weird shit in this movie, too.
Right.
Just random things. One in particular, which I will talk about a lot.
Or, you know what? Maybe I'll intersperse the script changes with the scenes that happen in the movie. That might make more sense.
Okay, sure.
So we're introduced to Billy, played by Zach, not Galifianakis. Why the fuck do I want to say that?
Zach Galligan. Yeah. Well, the opening scene is his father, which we kind of made fun of, is his father in Chinatown.
Yes.
Kind of, you know, casual racism going into the mystical Chinatown.
Yes.
He's trying to hawk his products. He's an inventor. And he ends up coming across this creature. The Mogwai or the Mogwai.
Right.
And he's like trying to, I want to buy it. Here's $100. Here's $200. Here's $300. He's the worst negotiator of all time.
Yes.
And then he basically steals it because the little kid, he gives the little kid a couple $100 and he gives him the Mogwai. And then they give him the rules. And we commented that it was really funny because he's talking about his son as if his son is 12. And then we find out that his son is 20.
A lot of this movie is like that, dude.
Yeah. That's the weirdest part about this movie for me. They treat Billy Peltzer, who's the kid, as if he's 12 years old. He's like a 12-year-old boy.
Yes.
But he's not. He's in his 20s. It's weird. His best friend is Corey Feldman, who's 13. And he's just this man hanging out with this kid, and they treat him that way. It's bizarre.
Yeah. Hoyt, Hoyt Axton yes. plays the father in this.
Yeah. Who's he, one of those guys that if you see his face, you're like, oh, I recognize
yeah,
that
you've
face.
Seen him in a ton
you've
of shit.
You've seen him in something.
He ad-libbed about 90% of his lines in this. Kind of just had a rough like framework of what was supposed to be done and accomplished in the script, and he just improvised.
Yeah, I could see that. It's pretty funny. It works. He's actually, if I was going to pick a, we're going to do high points and low points, but if I was going to pick something I loved about this movie, it's his performance.
Well, I feel like an uncultured asshole when we do these high points and low points, because a lot of times I find myself saying, well, the high point in this film is the third act when the shit got crazy. It wasn't like, I really liked that interaction between these two characters, but hey, fuck it. I make no...
That's fine.
You know, no, I make
fine.
No it's illusions.
Fine. It's whatever you like.
I'm not an art house man on this podcast, you know?
No, that's my job. I'm supposed to be the asshole on the podcast. You're the normal person and I'm the freak.
But you agree with me.
Yeah, no, definitely. In this case, the good part of this movie is when the gremlins show up, because I was zoning out. I mean, it starts kind of interesting. It gets weird. There was enough to make fun of, especially when his 12-year-old boy companion shows up. And then it just slows down for a long time. You're like, well, there's nothing going on in this movie.
You realize how dark those jokes are when we're talking about Corey Feldman?
Well, I know.
And who has outed a bunch of people in Hollywood.
Yeah, I know. And that's legitimately...
Not specifically, though.
Well, I don't think he can. I think that's the whole thing.
NDAs?
Yeah, I mean, Hollywood NDAs are super tight. You're always worried about people coming after you, suing you for defamation. There's no proof. I mean, it's... No, look, don't get me wrong. That's dark and sad. It is.
Hashtag Bryan Singer.
Having said that, oh my gosh, what about Bryan Singer? Bryan Singer's an interesting
one. We're going to break down some Bryan Singer films very shortly here.
We are. Bryan Singer is an interesting one because everybody's always said, you know, the allegations are out there. Google them. But he's never really been accused of anything, directly at least. Nobody's ever said, oh, he's done.
Right.
You know, he was with somebody underage or he was nothing. He's just got a proclivity. Look, if you're 18 in one day, you're his type, apparently. But he's very careful, from what I can tell.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway, moving on. No, it is sad. And talking about Corey Feldman in this context is tough, but it is extremely weird that the lead in this movie is written as if he's a 12-year-old child, but he's a 30-year-old man. It's bizarre.
Yes.
Let's change the subject. Let's talk about something else. Oh, I know what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the opening of this movie.
It's going to turn into a one-hour Pizzagate podcast.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about the opening because the opening like title sequence is nothing but Christmas. Just chock full of Christmas imagery, big snow, tons of Christmas decorations. And it is set to one of my favorite songs of all time, Christmas Baby, Please Come Home by Darlene Love, which in 1984, it's really interesting they were playing this song because that song and that album was considered. Do you know anything about this album? Okay, it's one of my favorite albums of all time.
I'm shaking my head, no.
Yeah, no. One of my favorite albums of all time, and it was considered sort of a forgotten album because it came out the day in 1963 that JFK was assassinated.
Good God.
Yeah, and it was produced by Phil Spector, speaking of creeps, and nobody paid attention to this album or bought it, and it kind of got lost to history. It had a renaissance when David Letterman started having Darlene Love on his show. That wasn't until 1986, and she would do Christmas Baby, Please Come Home every year right before Christmas until his show went off the air. And so the fact that this movie opens with that song so prominently is kind of interesting. It's almost like a little bit ahead of its time because people didn't really know that song or that album at this point. So when I heard that, I thought it was interesting.
Can we fit a Roman Polanski reference in here too?
Yeah, probably.
Jesus. How about this? We'll get this out of the way. Did you catch the Bond reference in this?
I absolutely did. Judge Reinhold orders a vodka martini, shaken not stirred.
And he fucks up the line.
He does. I noticed that, yeah.
So he tried to get this line right like 20 times.
It's not that hard of a line.
No, and he couldn't get it, so they just left it in.
What's he say exactly? Because he looked like he was like looking down at his feet.
He says, I think he reverses it. Stirred, not shaken.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How can you not get that line right?
I know.
It's funny when I saw Judge Reinhold, his name was in the credits. I went, my God, was he just in everything in the 80s? And the answer is yes, he was. But also, he's so young in this.
Yes.
And they kind of commented on it in the movie where they say, you know, he's like, I'm 20. He's one of the biggest assholes in the movie. There's a bunch of assholes in this movie. I'm 23 and I'm assistant bank manager and I'm going to be a bank manager at 25 and I'm going to be a millionaire at age 30. And I'm like, God damn. Yeah, you are really young.
Let's talk about Mrs.
The Wicked Witch. She's the Wicked Witch.
Yeah, the Wicked Witch.
She even dies. Did you catch it? She even dies in the Wicked Witch way with her feet up. Yeah.
Yes. She is the most over the top, like, mustache twirling. If women had mustache, well, I guess they do today.
Well, they can now.
Yeah.
How dare you?
But mustache twirling villain I have ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
Like, she's talking about killing this man's dog.
She wants the dog. Okay, so Billy Pelzer works in a bank. She comes into the bank and says, your little dog.
Well, we first get introduced to her. She's outside of the bank, and this woman goes with her child. Yeah. She's like, please, it's Christmas, and we just need a little more time to make the payment. And she's like, I am in the business of making money. Get you fucking freeloaders out of here. Fuck off.
Yeah, this is this was the Reagan years, everybody.
Both movies opening on this date had a lot of Reagan.
Very pro-Reagan sentiments. This was the era of Reaganomics. Yes, the good news is it worked perfectly.
Well.
No, I'm kidding. It didn't work at all. It was actually terrible. It's terrible economic.
How fucking dare you?
Terrible economic plan. Led to a recession in the late 80s.
Now we're going to go on a two-hour rant. We're going to break down the 80s.
Yeah, that's fine. Don't threaten me with a good time. Hey, man,
he broke down the Soviet Union, goddammit.
He didn't. No, he didn't. The Soviet Union broke itself down. It was imploding. The CIA knew it was imploding in the late 1960s.
Yeah, but he said, tear down this wall. So
that's all that matters. And they did. Yeah, no, that's exactly what happened. He said, tear down this wall. And Gorbachev was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. The way he said it. No, the Soviet Union was already imploding. Reagan had nothing to do with it.
Anyhow, to get back to this fucking Wicked Witch bitch.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nancy Reagan is what you're talking about.
Yeah, let's call her Nancy Reagan. She... shit. She's the worst of the worst, though. Like, right?
She's an over-the-top, as you said, she's an over-the-top, mustache-twirling cartoon villain.
Yeah, like...
She's the Wicked Witch of the East.
See, the thing that I hate in movies, and it really can go either way, but like... Like, for example, like, one that comes to mind to me is The Purge. So... The people behind this whole thing are all like these Republicans, but it's so over the top and like,
yeah, it's so silly.
Yeah, when like there's no nuance whatsoever to this. I guess, and I've never seen any of these movies, but like, I'm sure the Daily Wire is like throwing fucking, you know, these, you know,
Ben Shapiro wants to make Gremlins 3 so bad.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, but like, it's so over the top, and not even just like, I don't know her politics in this movie or anything like that, but. She's just the biggest pile of shit you've ever seen in your life.
Well, okay. So I don't even think it's a political thing. No. I think she's just
character.
She's just a villain.
Yeah.
She's just like an over-the-top villain.
Like, nobody is this evil. Wicked and people might be this shitty behind the scenes, but it's never like in a crowded bank with a bunch of people around. Like, I'm going to kill your fucking dog.
No, it's even worse than that. I want your dog so I can take it to a shelter and have them put it down. Yeah,
she like because wants to personally be responsible.
Yeah, because if I kill your dog, I'll do it slowly and I'll torture your dog. She said she's going to
put it in the dryer or something like that.
Yeah, put it in the spin cycle and let the dog die slowly. Just a monster. Just an absolute monster.
Absolute monster.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that was the point of the movie where maybe you and I both were looking at each other like...
What is happening?
Like, what the fuck is this movie? This is weird.
Yeah.
It's... Everything is so on the nose.
This was your first viewing of this.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And last.
You're not going to throw it on every December?
Absolutely not. No, I didn't like this movie very much at all.
Okay.
I'm. You know what? I'd like to see...
That's fair.
I'd like to see Gremlins 2 because I know everybody says like that's the fun one. So I would see that. This movie had its moments. It was really fun to make light of a few things. But yeah, for the most part, I was just like, I'm so out of this. It only got good when the Gremlins showed up.
See, you just don't get it, Matt.
That's okay, yeah, is. No, I don't. Yeah, it's me. I'm the problem.
Well, yeah, and that takes a long time too. You know, it
takes forever.
I'm doing a spoiler here with the reviews.
Okay,
this is a way harsher reviewed film, Gremlins 2.
Really?
It's notorious for being a mess.
Okay.
71% on Rotten Tomatoes compared to 86 for the critics.
Okay, 71 still not bad.
59 for the audience.
That's a lot lower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I can't wait to talk about that because I remember that movie very fondly as a child.
Yeah, I look forward to that one too.
But
you know what's weird about this movie too is all the things that are set up just disappear.
Like, such as?
Well, okay. Well, I mean, a lot of things. First of all, Billy disappears in this movie for a little while.
Right. Right.
The Wicked Witch of the East, we were talking about, she's in it and that she gets her comeuppance because a gremlin ends up killing her. But even once they do, it actually took me a second to be like, oh, shit, is that her? Oh, it is. Oh, okay. So she kind of disappears for a long time. The whole setup of Billy Peltzer working at the bank, that just goes away completely. Judge Reinhold, not that he needs to be in the movie for all of it because he doesn't, but he just goes away. Like they do all these things at the beginning that just like disappear.
Judge Reinhold had a way bigger part in this in the original script.
Okay, maybe we should start talking about the original script then and what it became, because I don't know. I'm curious.
Okay. We'll jump around then as we do.
Okay.
So the original script was a lot darker. A couple things happened in that didn't happen in this. We got to talk about two. When we talked about the Indiana Jones films, we talked about how Raiders of the Lost Ark was a catalyst for PG-13 rating.
Yeah.
This was the other one. There were two films that created the PG-13 rating.
Oh, Temple of Doom.
I'm sorry, Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom and this were the two.
Well, I thought it was Raiders.
No, it was Temple of Doom because okay. That came out also in 84. And then this came out in 84. And that was the thing that apparently Steven Spielberg even asked the MPAA, which we're going to talk about a lot in a few months, said, like, hey, we need something else. Like, this isn't a PG. This isn't an R.
Right.
Like, do something else. I'm sick of my films getting censored in this way.
So the original script had the gremlins being a lot more violent.
Okay. I would have liked that.
The interaction with the mother, they have one of the gremlins chopping her head off and rolling it down the stairs.
Oh, okay.
They have Corey Feldman being eaten alive by gremlins and his screams are drowned out by Christmas caroling.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
That's another thing that disappears. He just disappears from the movie.
Yeah.
He just goes away.
Yeah. Why is he even in this?
I don't know. It's weird. The first... We kind of touched on how gross their relationship is. We both commented the first scene with Billy Peltzer and Corey Feldman. Billy walks into his room and he starts like undressing in front of him. He's just changing clothes. And we're like, what the fuck? Why is this 32-year-old man changing in front of this 14-year-old boy? It's very weird.
That's fucking funny.
Oh, it's so bad. Anyway, carry on.
I think I hit on most of like those were things that stuck out when I was reading about this. Like,
so it was gonna be darker.
But those things, like, for sure we get a rated R rating. You know, so I don't know if they... Yeah, they did. They wanted it to be more family-friendly, so they cut those things out. But then the gremlins, I guess if it's like alien blood or monsters, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Oh, so you can have as much alien blood as you want. If it's human blood...
Look at the Avengers.
Sure,
you know?
That's
and,
true.
And that's a fairly recent example, but they kill 780 million aliens with green blood flying everywhere.
Right.
That's okay.
But it's all CGI, so it's fine. But and it's aliens.
But this one, it's all practical effects, which I'll talk about that too, because this is a very difficult film to make.
Yeah.
Oh. And most of it was the animatronics and the puppetry.
I think the effects in this are wonderful. That I loved.
But in this, like, one of the gremlins gets thrown in a microwave and exploded.
Yeah, there's some pretty, like, gory ends for these gremlins.
Oh yeah, head chopped off, it goes flying in the fireplace and is screaming as it's being burned alive. Mm-hmm. One of them gets put into a blender and I mean the mom is the one that does the most vicious killings in this.
I like the mom in this. She's one of my favorites. she has she's wielding dual knives like it's Halloween.
Yeah,
it's great.
So the original plan for the gremlins was to not use animatronics but to use spider monkeys.
Oh, okay.
They put the gremlin mask on the monkeys and they flipped the fuck out. One of them destroyed an office and shit everywhere. So then Joe Dante said,
that's a bad idea.
So puppets, huh? After that.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine the spider monkeys weren't super amenable to whatever you want to do with them.
They had Stripe and Gizmo as the same character in the original script, too. Mm. So it's kind of a split personality thing.
No, I like that Stripe and Gizmo were different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good. I like that Gizmo survives till the end.
Also, the original cut, they said there were too many gremlins. So Steven Spielberg was so pissed off, he suggested cutting them all out and calling the movie People. So,
oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's cute.
He pretty much let Joe Dante do his own thing. There was one scene that the studio didn't like and Spielberg didn't like, and it was a Santa Claus speech from Phoebe Cates.
Really?
Yeah. Why don't you break that down?
I also hate that speech.
Everybody wanted that out of the movie. Joe Dante wanted it, and they kept it in.
I wanted that out of the movie. I thought it was the worst. Actually, that, you know what? Let's just go ahead and say it. Low point, that's my low point of the film. I thought it was so jarring. So she gives a speech. She hates Christmas. She goes on this whole thing about how Christmas is awful, and some people hate it. And what does she say? Because we get actually two speeches from her. The first time she says, some people are opening presents, and other people are opening their wrists. Jesus Christ, like, that's insane. That's so dark. And then later in the movie, we get the explanation for why she hates Christmas. And she goes on this kind of unintentionally funny monologue about how the worst thing that ever happened to her was on Christmas Day. And a couple days earlier, her father had disappeared. And then on Christmas, we started to smell this smell from the fireplace. So we called the exterminator, thinking it was a rat. Turns out my father had climbed up onto the house and tried to jump down the chimney dressed as Santa Claus, but he broke his neck and died instantly. What the fuck? It's so weird. First of all, fireplace is much too small to slide down. I'm sorry. And it's just a weird, dark speech in the middle of this movie.
Joe Dante must have been one of those people in a dark place around the holidays, because...
Yeah, seems like it.
In the original script as well, he also had the dog being murdered. And he had a scene where the gremlins went to a McDonald's, and instead of eating the hamburgers, they were just eating all the people that were in there.
Oh, jeez. Well, was that Joe Dante or was that Chris Columbus?
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris Columbus.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I hate that speech too. I would have taken all of that out. I thought it was just, it's weird.
This was actually Joe Dante's idea, I believe. Make sure I have that right here.
Like the whole...
Oh, I'm sorry. Christopher Columbus. Columbus.
The concept was the idea.
Yeah, he got the idea for the creatures. He was going to college in Manhattan's garment district. And he said, by day it was pleasant enough, but at night what sounded like a platoon of mice would come out and hear them skeetering around in the blackness was really creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's actually talking about the people of New York City when he said that.
Oh, was he?
I've been to New York once. That's what it sounds like. I wouldn't go back.
Let's talk about the puppets.
They're great.
Each gremlin costs $40,000.
No. Really?
Each gremlin. They checked all of the staff and the actors' cars each day at the end of shooting.
To make sure they didn't steal any?
Correct.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's wild. They look fantastic. Genuinely,
the Gizmo puppet, they made like a ton of them, and the people that were making those were pissed off because Steven Spielberg kept making changes to them. He wanted to add, you know, different colors. He wanted the ears to be different. He just kept making changes, so these people were getting very frustrated with Steven Spielberg, because I guess he was the one making a lot of these changes.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, he was at the height of his powers. The puppets, $40,000, that's kind of crazy to hear, but they do look amazing.
Well, especially 1984 money.
Sure. I mean, okay, so I guess we can compare this movie to Ghostbusters. It came out the same day. In Ghostbusters, the effects are incredible, but there is some dated stuff. Nothing really looks dated in this movie. It all holds up really well.
If you notice, too, there's not a lot of bright lights. They did that on purpose. Mm-hmm. Old sci-fi trick back in the days when they didn't really master the technology. So there are no bright lights lit on the gremlins in this entire film.
Well, by necessity, there can't be, because that's part of the lore. Like,
well, they make that part of the lore.
Which writes it into the film, yeah.
Which we talked about the rules. We played that in the beginning. Mm. But it's no sunlight. It'll kill them. Don't like bright lights.
Yeah, no water.
No water. And don't feed them after midnight, which let's talk about how stupid that is.
Billy Pelcher's It's always after midnight. What's the not after midnight?
Zach Galligan brought that up.
I like how you always want to say Zach Galifianakis.
I'm so tempted, yeah.
I know. It's like, well, when is after midnight? It's technically always after midnight.
Yes.
He feeds them chicken. He thinks it's 11:30. He finds out his alarm clock is just busted after the fact. He also manages to get water on them immediately. And what happens is they essentially procreate. If water gets on them, they give birth to little baby gremlins.
Yep.
It's funny. It's like a series of things that have to happen to turn them into gremlins. Because if they get water on them, they procreate and they turn into more Mogwais. But then if they eat after midnight, that's when they turn into gremlins or they hatch.
What did you think of the effects?
I thought they were fantastic.
When Gizmo had popped out the gremlin babies.
Oh, they were great. I thought those were really good. The effects that I loved the most, though, was when they were transforming into gremlins. That reminded me of, like, Alien. Kind of had that gross, nasty, like, hatching out of an egg effect that I thought was really cool. That all looked fantastic.
Also, too, like, Joe Dante was down to his last few bucks before he got this role.
Really?
He made The Howling. We should throw that on the list, too, at some point.
Okay.
We have so many fucking movies on
this. We have years of ideas.
However, he made The Howling, and the studio shut down before he got paid. So this kind of, like, saved his life.
Wasn't Joe Dante, like, a notorious... Nothing wrong with this, but he was kind of like a... He was a B-movie director, right?
I'm not sure. I don't know a lot about his lore.
I kind of think he was.
Well, Matt's looking it up.
Yeah, well, now I have to know.
Let's talk about Corey Feldman in this. Why is he in this? He kind of had name value at this point.
Well, no, this was early in his career. I mean, he had just come off. I looked him up right before this. He had just come off his role in Friday the 13th.
Okay, so that's it.
That's it. I mean, he had done a bunch of stuff.
So the Lost Boys came after this.
Oh, this was Lost Boys was 88, something like that.
Okay.
And then Stand By Me was a couple years later. So his big roles were yet to come. He was just like a kid actor, like an up-and-coming kid actor.
Yeah.
I should look that up.
So,
He's again, like, it felt like the character of Billy was written to be somebody younger. Well, and then they just dropped in.
Yeah. Let's talk about Billy and Phoebe Cates.
Okay.
Because the way Billy is acting in this and the dialogue he's given, first of all, he was cast because Steven Spielberg saw Zach Galligan with Phoebe Cates auditioning. They had already auditioned for a few other movies together, so they were comfortable with each other. And he like put his head on her shoulder, and he said, "Jesus Christ, he's already in love with her. I've seen all I need to see." And he cast her just like that.
Oh, that's great. He's very good in this. In fairness,
there was also debate on if Phoebe Cates was innocent enough to play the girl next door kind of thing in this. Because she did Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay. With Judge Reinhold.
Right. But she shows her tits in that. And back in those days, like, that was, whoa. You know, you're really going over the edge there. Although, if you look at Hollywood these days, not a lot of chicks are showing their tits.
I wish they were. But they're not. But apparently Gen Z hates sex in movies.
Yeah, they're
that's a whole thing.
Intimacy coordinators were not a thing back
then.
Well,
no. Apparently, younger people, Gen Z in particular, they don't like sex in films. They don't feel that it's appropriate.
Why?
I don't know. I like sex in movies.
It depends on the film.
Well, of course. But if something requires a sex scene, it's fine. There were you and I both, really, even though we're a little bit of an age difference. When we were younger, there were whole comedies just centered around sex. That's it. That was the gag. That was the punchline. That was the setup. That was the movie.
It's what Red Letter Media calls boner comedies.
Yeah. Yeah. American Pie, the whole franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Euro Trip, Road Trip.
Yeah.
Come on. And you know what? They're all wonderful.
And all those like horror slasher films too usually had nudity.
Oh, every single one.
Yeah.
I just did my massive Halloween watch and most of them had some nudity at some point.
Agreed.
We were talking about Friday the 13th. That had it. Yeah, that was a selling point.
So let's talk about the voices.
Okay.
Because one blew you away.
Yeah, it did.
And that is the voice of Gizmo.
Uh-huh.
Voiced by the one and only Howie Mandel.
Now, was he a big thing at this point, 1984? I feel like no. His like, I know he's been a touring comic for a very long time, but I feel like his break came later.
So there was a animated cartoon back when I was a child. You may not have been born then, or you were a baby, one of the two. It was called Bobby's World. Mm-hmm. It was about a little baby. He rode around on a little tricycle. The song is great. The theme song, you have to check that out at the end of this.
Okay.
He voiced that character, though, and it sounds just like Gizmo.
Really?
And I didn't put the two together until I watched this movie. Because I haven't seen this in probably 30 years, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, but that was a very popular like animated TV show when I was growing up.
Okay. Okay, so he was doing voice work then.
Definitely.
That was maybe his thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a stand-up comic too. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how big he was then, but I was a kid, so
yeah, you know. He's been a working comic for a very long time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's nothing new. Yeah, that did kind of blow me away though. Right before we started recording, I just looked up the voice and I was completely shocked to see Howie Mandel.
Most of the Gremlins are voiced by Michael Winslow, who a very famous voice actor known for probably what's his most famous role is Jonesy's from Police Academy. Mm-hmm. So two very like kind of well-known names voicing these characters that don't have a ton of dialogue.
No, I mean, maybe the reason I was so surprised to hear about that was because the Gremlins, they have little bits of dialogue here and there, but you can barely make them out.
Right.
Same with the Mogwai. Like, you can't really understand what he's saying for the most part.
Right.
So it was just kind of surprising to hear names associated with that. Like, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I like, well, one thing about this movie is they don't spell everything out for you.
No.
If they were to reboot this movie.
Which they are.
Are they?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
It's been in the works for like years.
No.
There's going to be a Gremlins 3.
No.
Yeah. You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah. I'm not kidding. They've been working on this forever. I don't think anything's official yet, but it is going to be a thing. Probably like a soft reboot where Billy Peltzer comes back. He's going to be the old... Should we just do this now? He's going to be an old, decrepit, broken down alcoholic. And with nothing going on in his life, he's still in the same old hometown, and his niece, Baby Peltzer, comes to find him, and she shows him how to fight the Gremlins the girl power way.
Phoebe Cates is going to be the one that comes back and saves him
for sure. Oh yeah, no, yeah. She's too old now. There's got to be somebody young.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah, she'll be in it.
It's his niece, and she's 19 years old, and she's got a double PhD.
Of course.
And she's been experimenting with the Gremlins, and she's figured out exactly where they come from,
right?
And how to stop them, and how on top of that, because I was just going to mention how it's very vague how the Mogwais came to be, the rules, like where they come from.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Now we're going to get this full backstory in the reboot about how they're demons from the 12th dimension, mm-hmm. and it was all started by clearly a white European man. Mm. Who broke the rules and this was a catalyst for slavery or something like that. That's
well, and before the movie, we're going to get a full because you have to explain the movie.
Of course.
So we're going to get a full Disney Plus prequel series, 12 episodes, just called Mogwai.
Good
about
God.
Where they come from. It's going to be set in China in the 12th century, it's going to star Brie Larson. It's going to be great. No, but they really are rebooting. They really are rebooting this movie.
Then the end theme song is going to be a remix of the classic theme with Tekashi 619. And he's going to be doing this fucking thing.
It's just the theme. The trailer is just the theme played on the piano quietly. Yeah. 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 That's what's going to happen.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That's where we're going. But they really are rebooting it. I'm not making that up.
We'll have to go back to this podcast and see how much of that actually comes true.
Yeah, in a couple of years when they actually do all of that. And yeah, we'll see what's real.
I want to make something clear here. We're being facetious. We're taking the piss out of it.
We're joking.
Yes. And it sucks we have to say that, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. But We're kind of not joking at the same time.
But also, we know how this is going to go.
Yeah.
We saw Indiana Jones in the Dial of Destiny.
Yeah,
That's how these all go now.
Oh, fuck.
Yep. That's how it's
going to
be.
There is going to be some tie-in to, like, some bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, Phoebe Cates will be in the movie, but she'll have divorced Billy Peltzer.
Yes.
And she'll say, they'll get her for a scene, and she'll say, "That's why I had to divorce your granduncle, because he was obsessed with the Mogwai."
Yes.
And he turned to the drink.
100%.
We couldn't have a relationship anymore.
Actually, in today's Hollywood, and Gizmo is tied to the Chinese, it's going to be a heavy Chinese film.
Yeah.
There's going to be a Chinese savior that comes in here.
Mm.
Just like The Meg.
Is that how that movie ended?
The Meg is pandering to the Chinese people like I have never seen in my life.
Well, you have to pander to China because that's what sells the tickets.
Exactly.
That's how you keep your movie going.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen here.
This movie is going to love the Chinese audience.
Yes.
But doesn't China hate magic? They have a thing like they won't show movies that have too much magic
in
it.
You're correct about that.
Yeah. So, whatever. Anyway, they are rebooting this film. It's going to suck because they all do now. That's why we called our podcast the Old School Film Podcast.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about everything. And then we saw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and we said, never mind. We don't want to see any movies made after 2011 ever again.
Yes. And I know, like, the term woke gets thrown around way too much.
It's a word that I hate.
We don't really buy into that. No. But I would say South Park with the Pandaverse is a lot more accurate to how we feel. It's not about being woke. It's about... Like, we know that there's, like, what we have a problem with is, like, it's not that, like, okay, I'm making a movie and telling a story that has a message behind it. It's, we picture an executive roundtable of 16 studio execs going, here's a list of things we have to check off to make this marketable.
Yeah, and that's the thing that bothers me.
They don't give a fuck about the message.
Right. It just feels so corporate.
Yes.
And so pre-planned. I still haven't seen that episode yet. I got to watch it. But anyway.
And you know what? They paint Kathleen Kennedy, the real cat, because there's two Kathleen Kennedys, because it's multiverse, in a good light.
Mm.
It's more like she's trying to do the right thing, but it's just... She's kind of not going about it the right way, but in her mind, like, she's trying to do what's right. You know?
Sure.
They actually paint her in a very good light.
Okay.
But the alternate universe is the way, like, I would say, you know that crowd. We won't name the crowd by name, but
absolutely
that crowd who thinks everything is woke.
Well, that's the thing. I heard that episode. I haven't seen it yet. I need to. But there were so many things after that I saw where people were like, hey, yes, they're making fun of the quote-unquote woke crowd.
Right.
But they're also making fun of the people who get overly upset at this sort of thing as well. And, and I know South Park is kind of famous for that, where they just poke at everybody. But it's worth keeping in mind that they're really poking fun at all those people.
If you ever pay attention to anything South Park does, we've done Team America on here.
Mm-hmm.
They are not, like, heavy-handed on one side.
No, they don't discriminate.
They get everybody. And this is no different.
Yeah, they don't have an agenda.
No.
They are just out to poke fun at all kinds of people.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, anyhow...
Anyway, should we talk about Gremlins again?
So, like we talked about, a bunch of bullshit happens in the middle. They do build to the tension of this. It takes a long time for them to get there, and I understand they're building to it, but there's just not a lot of interesting things that happen in between that. And when we finally get to the third act, it is chaos on a level. They did all the cocaine. Whoever wrote this did all the cocaine in the room. Like, there's no doubt about it, right?
No, and I think that middle point is where it really loses me, because there's some interesting setups, some fun Christmas. Again, I love Christmas. There's some fun Christmas imagery and music. You set up the lore.
We're going in a full run here of Christmas movies. Maybe we should talk about the fucking Christmas in this movie.
Oh, yeah, it's everywhere. This is fully like, it's Christmas. Do you see?
The Mogwai is literally a Christmas present.
For his son, for his 12-year-old son, except he's 35 years old.
Let's dive into that a little more, too.
Okay. Because
it was the one thing we kept commenting on the entire time.
Yeah.
this character of Billy was written for a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Every interaction, he gets the Mogwai and he's like, "Dad, Daddy dearest, can I pick it up?
Thank you, Papa.
Can I pick up the Mogwai?
Thank you, Papa, for my Christmas present."
There's a stocking that's clearly meant for him.
Yeah. Oh God, the stocking. I had that in my notes. There is a stocking that I think when the mom, when she's going on her Halloween style killing rampage, where she's killing the gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one stocking on the Christmas or on the mantelpiece because of course they have one son. She cuts it open and out falls a toy robot, which presumably they were going to give to their 35-year-old son. Like, what the fuck? He's supposed to be a child, but he's being played by this man.
He invites his best friend, Corey Feldman, into his house, who is like 20 years younger than him.
Right? By the way, I did look up their age difference. They're only 7 years apart in age.
That's incredible.
Yeah, but when you're 21, I think he was 20 when he did this movie. Like,
he's 13.
Yeah, I'm making jokes about the whole thing that he's like 30. He's not. I think Billy Pelcher was like 20 in this.
We talk like me and you.
Yeah.
I'm 40. Matt's 32. We have 8 years behind us, but we're both grown men.
Right. These days, that doesn't make much of a difference. But if you knew me when you were 20, exactly.
You know, with you and your 13.
Then it'd be weird.
Yeah.
Right. These days, it doesn't matter. But as you get older, you know, those ages, like, they narrow.
If I was 22, you think your parents would be cool with you, like, being at my house every Friday night?
Fuck no. They'd be like, "What the hell are you doing? You're hanging out with this man. You're 12. Yeah, Corey Feldman that's the bit I was talking about when he just, like, walks into his room and he starts changing. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening in this movie?
Oh, man, my pants are really chafing me.
Did you? Hey, Corey Feldman, can you help me take my pants off? Just there you go. Unzip it slowly.
Are you hot in here? I gotta take my pants off.
It's getting really hot in here. Why don't you take your pants off too, Corey Feldman? Again, I feel very bad talking about Corey Feldman in this way, but yeah, it's so weird. It's
undeniable.
It is. Well, you watch it and it's just bizarre. And yeah, the robot falling out of the lone Christmas stocking. We both went, "Wait a minute! They only have one son. Yeah. Is that for him?"
And then the contrast, like, grown man, with him and Phoebe Cates.
Yeah.
Phoebe Cates seems like a woman in this.
Mm-hmm.
Billy seems like a little boy trapped. He's like, it's a movie Big with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, he's written like a little boy.
Yeah, dude.
She seems like a grown-ass woman just trying to make it in the world.
She's a fucking bartender in this.
Yeah. Bartender and bank teller, I think.
Yes.
And Judge Reinhold is also like a child, but he's going to be a bank manager.
Do we ever see him again after that bar scene?
That's what I was saying. He just disappears. Like, a bunch of stuff in this movie just starts and then goes away.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Let's talk about the dog real quick. And the reason why I'm bringing the dog up, and the Golden Retriever, was a Golden Retriever, right?
I don't think so. It was too small to be a Golden Retriever.
Well, whatever it was. Yeah. A real dog, though. The real dog.
Yeah.
Okay. This dog, Mushroom, wouldn't follow Zach Galligan across the street. So they attached the pair with a monofilament line. Aside from that, director Joe Dante noted that the dog was a joy to work with and a priceless talent of reliability, creating the ideal reaction to particular lines that were perfect to cut to. In a dish room, Mushroom tended to work easily with the Mogwai and Gremlin puppets, moving in sync with them during shooting to produce believable reactions to their actions.
Interesting. Okay.
He's the absolute star of this movie, according to the cast.
Well, okay, so I kind of agree. Halfway through this movie, I was thinking, hey, this dog's kind of the best part of the whole thing. It is true. He has, like, amazing reaction shots.
It is true. 100%.
Yeah, frankly, better than Phoebe Cates. So
what ends up happening here is once they see that some water spills on Gizmo and five new Mogwais come out, the dad is like, "Oh, we can make a buck on this."
Yeah, immediately he forgets the rules. Don't get him near water. You'd think, I was thinking that Billy was going to say, "Oh, I spilled water on him and this happened." And the dad was going to say, "Billy, I told you, don't get water on him. That's they told me the rules." And then he takes his belt off and beats him. Because Billy is supposed to be 11 in this, even though he's 38 years old. But he was just like, "Oh, well, we can probably sell these things. It's the American way." Hey, again, it was the Reagan years. Every man for himself.
Reaganomics, baby.
Reaganomics, baby. God forbid you need health care.
So they're throwing mogwais all over the place, including a school like science teacher.
Yeah.
And they're putting water on them on purpose now to multiply them.
Yeah, even that's a funny thing. Billy goes to his school science teacher, even though he's much older than that. That's like the first guy he thinks to go to is, well, this guy knows science, so maybe he can tell us what's going on here.
Corey Feldman should have been playing the main character here.
Yeah, that's...
But then you can't have the love interest with Phoebe Cates.
I mean, you could. It'd still be deeply inappropriate, but you could. It'd be kind of funny if you did.
That boy his luckiest metal man in America award.
I entered this movie a boy. I left a man.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, but you're right. Like, somebody younger should have been sort of the... should have been the lead. You don't need somebody that's Billy's age to be, you know, the role. It could have been anybody. Could have been Corey Feldman.
All the Mogwais are starting to eat after midnight. Like, they fuck up... Oh, let's talk about when they tie up the dog to the Christmas lights.
So, okay. In retrospect, I realized that was the Gremlins or the Mogwais.
Yeah.
But at first, I was like, oh, it's the Wicked Witch. Did she show up and the dog got out and she tied him into the Christmas lights? And I was like, God damn, this movie's dark.
Yeah.
But now I realize it was the Mogwais.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So they do that. They find ways to like eat after midnight and then... They have these cocoons that are gross as fuck. I mean, really great special effects here.
That's the alien comparison I was mentioning. It very much reminds me of that.
And the science teacher is the first to die.
Mm-hmm.
The lone black guy in this film
is the
fucking first to die.
The black man in the movie.
Yeah.
It's a terrible old trope. Yeah, but
it holds true here. Yeah. So he gets eaten alive. The gremlins have now taken over this entire town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most off-the-wall, bonkers fucking scenes you've ever seen.
This is the good part of the movie. Well, I think Billy drops him in, like, the high school swimming pool.
Yes.
And you just see the swimming pool start to bubble up, and you're like, oh, God. Yeah. They're multiplying at a crazy rate.
So
Mrs. That was also kind of very Ghostbusters, in my opinion. Very similar, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, because it's similar to the scene where the ghosts are, like, taking over the town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except that scene's better, but yeah.
Yes, I agree. But, like... Wicked Witch answers the door, and it's the gremlins singing Christmas carols in front of the door. Why? We don't know why.
Oh, because it's fun.
But they fuck up the wiring on her little wheelchair thing that goes up the banister of the house.
It's the stair lift that takes, like, the old people stair lift takes you all the way up.
She goes flying out the window and dies.
That got a big chuckle out of both of us.
Me too.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, and then the feet are up in the air like the Wicked Witch.
Very Wicked Witch, yeah.
Then the Santa Claus is being attacked by gremlins, and the police, who is, like, the sheriff and then Mike from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, that was wild. You pointed that out. Yeah. That was over my head.
They're like, what's going on? He's got all that stuff on him. And the Santa's just being, like, attacked by all these gremlins. We got to Phoebe Cates in the bar. And she is just, she's serving the gremlins. She's pouring them all beer.
The bar is nothing but gremlins at this point.
Nothing. And they're all fucking drinking beer, passing out. They're smoking cigarettes. One gremlin has, like, 6 cigarettes in his mouth.
Yeah. And what I love is every gremlin... has a different, like, I would say vibe, but maybe personality is the right word.
You should see the second one.
Okay, I can't wait.
Way more.
That I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
One is like an old school detective. There's a couple of dames.
A flasher.
There's drunk. There's a flasher. That's right. He's got, like, the trench coat. And he just, like, opens the trench coat. Amazing. They're all, like, doing different human things. It's very, very
playing
funny.
Poker.
Yeah, they got a poker game going on.
Phoebe Cates finally escapes by taking pictures of them, and it's like that old flash camera.
It's a Polaroid.
A Polaroid, yeah. Exactly, yes. So then, for some reason, first of all, they're walking through the town, and it's just destroyed, and they're playing, like, this synth Silent Night.
We both heard that Silent Night and went, my God.
Yes.
What is happening?
They all end up in the theater at the end, right? So they light this, like... explosion thing in the theater, and then the gremlins are all chasing them out of the theater. They're watching Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, they also use the kind of clever. They use the backlight of the projector to scare off the gremlins a little bit because they're afraid of lights. They do that and they light it on fire, so it's kind of clever. Very much reminded me of Inglourious Basterds, the end scene where they burn down the whole thing and Hitler's in the theater.
Yes.
A little bit of inspiration for that. But that's kind of a cool scene where they get rid of everybody except one.
Right. So when they did this explosion scene, they blow up the theater. Phoebe Cates asked the explosive guy, how big will the explosion be? He said, well, we've got it packed in pretty tight. And Cates thought, what the hell does that mean? She went on to reveal, in the event, it was deafening. And the heat was so intense, I thought it had singed my eyebrows. It blew the doors off of the theater, as you can see in the film, and it shattered windows on a building at Universal a mile away.
Holy shit.
So this was a massive explosion.
Yeah, it looks it.
Yeah.
If I ever go up to an explosives guy and they say, we got it packed in pretty tight, I'm going to just start running in the opposite direction. That seems terrifying. That reminds me of Thunderball, another James Bond reference. When they blew the ship at the end of the movie, they packed so many explosives into the ship, they ended up blowing out windows like 5 miles away.
That's incredible.
It was insane. It was so much explosive.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll cover Thunderball at some point.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Probably next year.
I hope so.
Anyhow, so the last scene of the film is Stripe, and they're doing this whole chainsaw scene. Gizmo.
Dude, the chainsaw got me. That's like a straight horror movie thing.
Yeah, and they show him like first-person view.
Yeah.
Gizmo kind of saves the day, flies into with like a car.
He's driving in with like an RC car.
Goes off the ramp, pulls the shutters, the sunlight comes in and melts him. Wait till you see what he does in the second one.
Okay. Is Gizmo in the second one?
Yes.
Okay.
Incredible. That's all I can tell you, dude.
All right.
You know how he had inspiration from a movie from this one?
Yeah.
What movie was that? Do you recall?
The inspiration for this one?
Yeah. It was when he was watching somebody drive a car.
Was it Bullet?
I can't recall.
Okay. I don't know.
Well, anyhow, in the second one, the inspiration for his revenge is Rambo.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So let me just put it that way.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I look forward to this.
Yes. Anyhow, so that's it. And then the Chinese guy comes at the end and takes the Mogwai back and tells Billy, someday you might be ready for this.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he shows up in their house and Mike and I both said, oh my God, he's 9 feet tall.
Yeah.
He was just standing on a step, but it was framed really weird. So he's kind of funny that he throws the $100 bills on the floor. I don't need your money.
Yeah.
Give me the Mogwai back. You've done enough damage.
He does take the smokeless ashtray though.
Yeah, he does. Because the dad's the inventor.
That's another trope in the 80s.
Yeah, we were talking about that. The
shitty inventor.
Yeah, the 80s and 90s, the never-do-well inventor dad. He's like, I have all these crazy ideas, but they never make any money. Very much in this movie. So he takes the Mogwai back, and that's the end of the film.
The end of the film.
Yeah.
And it's telling you, if you have a power outage, make sure you're... Well, I don't know how that makes any... Or if your washer and dryer goes out...
That's right. There's a voiceover with the dad.
Make sure you turn all the power on.
Right. Make sure you turn the lights on because it might just be a gremlin. Kind of a cool voiceover. Yeah. I don't know. That was kind of neat, actually.
This was the last movie to be shot on Eastman Color 125T film stock, which was discontinued shortly after this movie finished shooting. And we talk about that often, how the 80s movies kind of have this, like, I don't know, grime to it.
Early 80s movies.
But this has that too.
Yeah, for sure.
And then the early 90s, you see a more like sheen, shine.
It's glossy.
It's glossy.
Well, we both said, or you mentioned it, that Ghostbusters 1 versus Ghostbusters 2. Little glossier with Ghostbusters 2. That was 89, Ghostbusters was 84. This is 84.
You'll see that same thing though in Gremlins 2.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. Plus, coming off the 70s, like the grimiest era of films was the 1970s.
Yeah.
That's just how things were shot. Which I love. But this was, you know, closer to that than the 90s. So, makes sense. Okay, that's the movie. We kind of touched on it. What's your high point and low point?
The high point is for sure the third act.
I agree.
The bar scene in particular, I really enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, the bar scene is probably my high point.
You know what, though? It's a toss between that and the mother battling the gremlins.
That is a good scene. I like that a lot. I would
the low point, probably the second act.
Yeah, it drags. It's very middling.
It drags.
I would say my high point, the third act is great. Just all the gremlin mayhem, super fun. The mom killing gremlins is great. The low point is probably the Roman Polanski-esque relationship between Billy Peltzer and his 13-year-old lover. I don't know. Okay, so in all seriousness, I think this movie is okay. I had a good time with it. There's some fun stuff. I'm excited for Gremlins 2. I don't think it's all it's cracked up to be. I don't love it.
Let me ask you this, though. If we weren't sitting here drinking beer watching this together, would you have as much enjoyment out of this?
No.
That's what I thought.
I would have fallen asleep in the second act. If I was at home, I love to watch movies at night. I typically watch them. I have a nice TV. Typically will
in the bed.
I will get in bed, watch a movie because I love to relax.
Yeah.
And see how it goes. If I was watching this at home by myself, no booze, no beer, no friends, no funny chatter, get in bed, watch a movie, I would have been asleep 30 minutes into this movie. It's not that enjoyable.
I tend to agree.
Yeah.
I don't know why this movie isn't held in such high regard. I guess it all hinges on that third act.
Yeah, and like I know that's what Gremlins 2 is it's just the gremlins doing mayhem.
Yeah.
And that's what people like about it. And that's the good part of this movie too. But you have to just wait to get there. Yeah. I mean, it is a slog.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Whatever. Whatever. This is the intro to our Christmas run. It is Christmassy, in fairness. It's very Christmassy. It feels
absolutely.
But it's not very good.
Yeah. Maybe if you can just watch that third act. But other than that...
Are you a little disappointed?
Yes.
You kind of liked this movie, or you were excited to talk about it.
Well,
but
it's been
a long time. It's been a long time.
Gremlins 2 is the one I remember the most.
Sure.
So, and we'll get there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I might be looking through that right now with rose-colored lenses. It could be a pile of shit. That's how we felt when we watched Kickboxer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kickboxer was kind of fun, but in a bad way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Merry Christmas, everybody. This is a good kickoff to the season.
Indeed. Merry goddamn Christmas.
Absolutely.
That'll do it for this episode, though. Oh, final thoughts?
It's fine. Watch something else. If you want to watch a Christmas horror film, Krampus, with Adam Scott and a bunch of other people, that movie kicks ass. I watched it the other night. Hopefully, we'll talk about it next year. That is a phenomenal, scary little Christmas movie. This is not.
So, download this podcast wherever you can find it, and you can follow us on the socials on Threads, OSM Podcast. On Instagram too. I've been posting on there lately. So
you have, yeah.
Check that out, and we will see you next week.
Bye.